I must admit I was wondering why the Mass, celebrated in St. Peter's Basilica, wasn't going to be held on the actual date of the Pope's death. That's April the 2nd. I asked around and soon found out that it's because this year, April the 2nd falls on Good Friday, a liturgical feast. It also wasn't very hard to think of the right person to speak to in remembering John Paul II.
Marco Politi, papal biographer and columnist for Il Fatto Quotidiano.
You were the obvious person to turn to in remembering John Paul II. Time goes by and memories do blur a little bit. Details, they kind of get lost. But some things do stand out. What would you say stands out in particular when we think back to the legacy of John Paul II?
The more the time goes by, the more people concentrate on the essentials. I would even say it is not so important when and how Pope Wojtyla will be proclaimed a saint, because already in the public opinion all over the world, he is one of the great personalities of the 20th century and of the beginning 21st century. In this sense, he is already Wojtyla the Great.
He has succeeded, Marco said, in transforming the role of the Catholic Pope into being not only important for Catholics or for Christians, but for the world scene.
He has transformed the papacy into a spokesman for human rights. He has brought the Roman pontiff to advocate religious dialogue, cultural dialogue, and to be very clear on the issues of a human face globalization and on the issue of war and peace. When the Bush administration decided to wage war onto Iraq, Pope John Paul II didn't just make some speeches very in general against the war, but he really mobilized the Vatican on a diplomatic level in order to avoid the war. He sent a secret message to President Bush, then he sent special envoys to Bush and to Saddam Hussein, then he organized meetings of all the papal nuncios. And when he realized that it was not possible to stop the war, he, in any case, made it very clear that the Vatican was against the war. Absolutely.
This background, Marco explained, allows us to understand why countries like Chile and Mexico voted against the Iraq invasion at the UN Security Council, depriving the Bush administration and the Blair government of an outright majority.
So, on all these levels, peace, justice, religious dialogue, and advocacy of human rights, and in the same time, a strong message of faith and of the importance of faith in the modern world, John Paul II will not be forgotten.
At the same time, Marco continued, there was John Paul's extraordinary capability of being in constant contact with people.
To find contact with people and with masses also of non-believers. I'll never forget at the Lake Genezareth, when I was with the Pope in the year 2000, the Pope was holding a speech to the youth in Israel, and near me was an Israeli policewoman. And I asked her, "What do you think about this Pope?" And she answered me, "I absolutely don't care about the Catholic Church." And she said it also in a tone of a sort of despise. But, she added, "He's a man of God."
Yes, that's probably what my strongest memory is, of a man of great humanity, someone with whom I could certainly have felt comfortable with, even in the most ordinary of circumstances.
He was absolutely able to find contact, especially to the normal men. He spoke a lot to the journalists, but this was business. actually we felt that he was not so much interested in us, just in conveying the message. But when he took the hand of one believer along the street, he really focused on this man, and this man felt that the Pope was speaking to him. And even when he spoke to great crowds, every single listener felt directly touched by his word. There was also something physical. Once I hid myself in Riga, in Letland, I hid myself in the crowd to give him the hand, to see how it was physically. And his hand was very warm and was really conveying a personal fluid of being near to the people.
Now, how many years did you travel and work close to John Paul II? And did he recognize you? Did he know who you were?
I began to travel with him since the first trip to Mexico in the year 1979, his first trip, his first international trip. And up to now, I made more than 80 international trips, both with Pope John Paul II and Benedict XVI. He, of course, knew every one of us journalists who were following in the trips, and he had a very nice habit, which was to come to the part of the plane where journalists were sitting and then to walk slowly along the aisles in order to give to every one of us the possibility to ask a question. So in every international trip, generally it was four trips in a year, there were 20-25 journalists who could ask directly the Pope a question without any filter, without any censorship.
Do you mean the questions you used to ask John Paul II, he didn't know them beforehand?
No, he didn't know them beforehand. He didn't absolutely care to know them beforehand. And he was ready to answer even questions which could be politically hot. For instance, I remember when he flew to Cuba, there was one journalist of Latin America who asked him, "What do you think about Che Guevara?" And he answered, "Now he is in front of the trial of God, but I think he cared very much about the poor." So he, in the same time, he was very direct, very spontaneous, but also very subtle from a political point of view in his answers.
And why did you choose to write a book about John Paul II?
Well, it was by chance, because I was working already at the time of the conclave when John Paul II was elected. Then I followed him in all his trips to Poland. And then my newspaper, which was then Il Messaggero, sent me to Moscow as Moscow correspondent. And so I could see from the other side of the Iron Wall the impact of the pontificate of John Paul II in Eastern Europe. And when I came back from Moscow and began to write for La Repubblica, I met Carl Bernstein, and we both decided to write a biography of John Paul II, which eventually became a great bestseller both in Europe and in the Americas.
And this, Marco reminded me, is not the only book he has dedicated to the figure of Pope John Paul II.
Later on, when he died, I was touched by the great participation of the people in Rome, in Italy, and from all over the world in the last days of John Paul II, how they followed him when he was ill. And this was another special characteristic of John Paul II. He had been known all over the world as a strong athlete of God, the sportsman of God. And later, when he became ill and the Parkinson was going on and on, he didn't hide himself within the Vatican like it was a custom in the past, but he transformed his ill body into a message. And the message was, "I am suffering like Christ was suffering, so I take part in the Passion of Christ, And I don't resign because also Christ can't come down from the cross. But in the same time, showing my suffering, I remember that all over the world there are suffering people, and these suffering people have a great dignity. So I share with them this dignity, and I communicate to all the world that suffering is something with great dignity and which is important to think over. So many people was following his last days, and when he died, there were in St. Peter's Place not only Catholics, non-believers, Christians, Jews. I remember a Muslim woman who came and put her veil down on the earth and to begin to pray like they do in Islamic countries. And later on, when in the Vatican Basilica they showed his corpse, there were more than 3 million people who came. I am always very cautious with figures, but it was really 3 million people who made long queues, and I came also during the night, and there was this great river of people almost standing because they could move 5 steps only every quarter of an hour, but they wanted just to have a last glimpse of this personality. And so many children wrote also on little pieces of papers which were put on the columns of Bernini Colonnade, "Ciao Papa, goodbye Daddy," or "goodbye Grandpa."